I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
What a career for Lorenzo Alexander, the longtime Washington Redskins special team ace and do everything good guy. Left D.C., wanted to stay here. They didn't want to pay him, so he went to Buffalo and became a Pro Bowler. His career began back in 2005 as an undrafted free agent with the Panthers, and he announced after the game on Saturday night, Bills-Texans, that he would be retiring. He is on the Mattress Warehouse hotline right now. Congratulations, buddy. A heck of a run, Zoe.
Appreciate that, fellas. How you guys been doing?
Doing well, man.
I want to go back to, 2005, you're undrafted, you're with the Panthers, and I think, tell me if I'm wrong, you ended up in Baltimore the next year before showing up in Washington. When you first got on the field with the Redskins?
I was just in the Ravens for like 4 days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But when you first came to the Redskins, was your first action when they used to say number 79 reporting eligible, number 79 before you became a defensive player wearing 97?
Correct, yeah. So my first year there, I had the number 79. I was a D-tackle when they brought me in. And during that year where I was on practice squad, I had to play everything on for the look teams. And so that next year they brought me back in as an offensive lineman, went through training camp, or OTAs as an offensive lineman, went to training camp, moved me back to defensive lineman. And then when we started the season off, that was the year that Randy Thomas, I think he tore his tricep, and they moved me back to offensive line. And so that whole year I was kind of on the carousel as far as flipping back and forth. And,
wow.
But, yeah, the majority of my snaps was like playing like that XO, that extra big tight end. And that was fun because I think Saunders was the OC then. And so sometimes I used to split out like at wide receiver, motion in. And so I got to do, little people stuff when I was a big man at 300 pounds doing it.
So, yeah, what was the heaviest you ever weighed in the league?
315.
Wow. That's amazing. And what do you weigh now?
Yeah. Well, I'm a little heavy now. I went on a little binge, but I probably play at like 240. You know, the season's been over. You know, I just let loose a little bit and go to all these restaurants, but 240.
So 240. So, and the positions you played tight end, you played inside linebacker, outside linebacker, offensive line, and down defensive tackle, basically, right? I mean, am I missing anything? And of course, you made Pro Bowl on special teams.
Right, a little fullback and then special teams. Yep.
Fullback, too, yeah.
What a career, man. I mean, how do you sum up these last 14 years?
Unique. I mean, I guess it's probably the one word that I could probably come up with. It's definitely out of the ordinary. You don't have guys that probably play as many positions as I do and still are able to carve out a sustainable career. And a lot of that's just because I had great teammates and was in systems where coaches, I think, valued my my flexibility. Because sometimes, you always hear that saying, jack of all trades, master of none, and you kind of get kind of pushed out because they can't find a place for you that you're good enough or great enough to play, and then your career is cut short. But everywhere I was at, defensive coordinators or offensive guys saw that flexibility and used it to our advantage as far as how we formed our rosters and then obviously how they played me on Sundays.
Our buddy Lorenzo Alexander is with us, recently announced his retirement after just a terrific career that we're kind of going over now. So what was the toughest position to play for you?
Wow. The toughest position, I mean, it had to be linebacker, especially when I had to play Mike when Fletch never missed any games. But the transition of where I had to make calls and, especially in practice, calling out the defense, making sure guys were in line, talking to the back end, making sure the checks are going, because that's something that you never do as a defensive lineman. And that's predominantly what I played my entire year. You may make a game check with your end, but you never had to communicate with 10 other guys and get everybody on the same page. And so that was the hardest thing. And then you add in the eyes aspect as far as now that you're standing up, you see everything, you know, sideline to sideline pretty much. And so you have to really train your eyes to be in the right place so that you don't get out of position. And so with those two things, communication and having eyes, was definitely the hardest thing to kind of get used to.
When did you know it was time? Like, was it just right after the game? Was it a few weeks ago, months? When did you know?
I made the decision probably middle of the year where I was like, okay, I'm retiring. I kind of went into the season with an open mind. Okay, let me just fill it out, see how I'm feeling. We'll see how it is. But, you know, really over the last two or three years, me and my wife have kind of discussed it. I told her a couple of times, you know, I'm probably going to retire this year, go out there, ball out. No, I'm coming back. But doing this year, just the way my body was feeling, really started to try to take a big picture perspective as far as where I was at, as far as in my decision. Like, if I wanted to play, what did that mean? And then if I didn't want to play, what did that mean? And as far as playing, every reason why was selfish reasons, because we're financially secure. I've been an MVP, Pro Bowl MVP. I've been an All Pro. I've started, I've played in playoff games, everything, but won a championship. So the only reason I would come back would be to continue to glorify my passion on my knees as far as wanting to play ball. You know, people recognizing, oh, that's a linebacker for the NFL for the Bills, you know, that type of stuff, versus not playing, where it was being there with my kids, taking them to school, being at practice, going on trips with my wife, spending time with her, and then being able to do that with a high quality of life. Because obviously, if I continue to tackle on years of football at my age, it just increases the chances of getting hurt even more significantly. And so I want to have a high quality of life as far as participating with my family. And once I made it about my family, it definitely made it brought me to a sense of peace and calmness about making the decision. So that's kind of how it kind of went throughout this year, and kind of like my thought process in far as making a decision that I know I can live with and have no regrets about.
Lorenzo Alexander moved on from the Redskins after 2012, a couple of years in Arizona, and then went to Oakland before settling in with the Bills and having one of the more successful runs of his career. He had a 12.5 sack season as an outside linebacker. I still think that was one of the more incredible years, not just of your career, but that I've seen, because you know, at no point did we really see you as an OLB a whole lot here. Then you go to Arizona, Oakland, you're not really used in that way. It's one thing to get run and to get some burn, but then to have 12.5 sacks, I mean, that's a total that is reserved for the best in the sport at that position.
Right.
How do you explain that season?
You know, it really, because as kind of going back to Washington, as my career was starting to take form and I became more of a defensive guy, special teams guy, but more like a defensive specialist coming in on third down or certain packages, I was starting to track that way as far as developing a skill set to rush the passer. Obviously, being around Ryan Kerrigan, Rack, guys that, you know, I really learned a lot from. And then when I got the deal in Arizona, the third game of the year, I tore my Lisfranc, and that just really set everything back as far as my football career and the projection that I was on. And so when I got healthy, I took a step back in a sense from a defensive standpoint and went back to my normal role as far as being a special teamer, because health-wise, I wasn't the same guy. But I could play special teams because of just the mental knowledge that I had and could get to places, position guys, use some of the veteran tricks. And finally got healthy when I came to Buffalo. And so Rex used me. I played every down, you know, first, second, you know, third down, as well as played teams. And when you have, you know, just a high rep count, you have more opportunities to set up a guy, beat a guy. You know, maybe they blow, mess up on a protection, and you come free. And so you're able to take advantage of all those opportunities. And that's how I was really able to produce, you know, 12.5 sacks, just getting healthy. And really my skill set was at a point to where I could rush a guy and win more often than not.
How old are your kids now? What will your days look like without football?
Oh, well, our oldest one, she's out of the house. She just turned 24. And then, but in the house, we have 11, 9, and 5. And so, I mean, our days are packed as far as my daughter's in the dance, acting. Some of you guys might have saw her sing the national anthem. And so we're invested
in
her.
That's right, yeah.
Well, it was really cool. It surprised me. I didn't know anything about it. And so she's gifted. So, you know, working with her in that, she also wants to start playing more sports. My son, both sons play everything. I mean, being up here, we've played hockey, soccer, baseball, basketball, lacrosse. We've done it all. And so for me, it'd just be really cool to now be able to really invest in you know, just going out in the backyard. Because right now, like during the season, I'm like, I can't do nothing, dude. I'm sore. I'm going to be out there just watching you. And so just to be able to get out there, I think we sometimes take that for granted, you know, as fathers, just being able to go out there and play with your son without having any pain or achiness. And so I'm going to be in heaven, just be able to go out there and enjoy that time with them to wrestle, play hoops, throw the football around, and just, you know, just be dad and not have to worry about having to run off to work or having to rehab or get a massage to prepare for the next season.
Are you coming back here, or where will you guys be living?
We're going to set up in Phoenix. While we were there, we really love that area. I mean, the cost of living is awesome, and then you don't have to deal with any snow. It gets kind of cold during this time of year, but I can bear down with that. But it's something to say when you can wake up and the sun is shining, you just feel motivated to go do something.
I love it, man. It's very relatable, by the way, what you were talking about playing with your kids. I didn't have to play NFL football, and I'm concerned about it. I'm sore just getting out of bed in the morning, and I am just a fat zilch. So it is awesome, man. I'm so happy for you. Congratulations on an amazing career, being great to us for so many years, and I can't find anybody who says a bad word about you, buddy. Congrats.
You been looking?
Yes, I actually wanted to see if I could find one guy.
You wouldn't believe it. I got a text from him a couple weeks ago. He said, give me a bad word on Lorenzo. I said, why? He said, I'm asking everyone I know.
Right. No, it's all good. No, I appreciate you, though, guys. It's been a pleasure, obviously, getting to know you guys and the friendship that we've developed.
Well, it's awesome having you on, and congrats to go out on your own terms. What a career. One of the good guys, and one of my favorite players I've ever covered, Lorenzo Alexander. Be well, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
I'll see you guys.
And he's got a future broadcasting career. He can do whatever he wants. He can do radio. He can do TV. I mean, that guy is he's a sharp cookie.
Superstar, man.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Which division round NFC game is better? We'll talk about that next on G&D. Big thanks to Lorenzo Alexander for joining us. If you missed the interview, you can grab the podcast, grantanddanny.com and thefandc.com when we're done today. Also, remember to download the radio.com app because we've got a rewind function that you can use throughout the show. You literally just toggle with your thumb, rewind and fast forward and go back to being live. It's really, really cool. Great way to listen to the show. Radio.com, you'll never miss another moment. You just download the app, select our station. You can rewind up to 24 hours and catch everything the way you want it, when you want it. Who's had a more fascinating career than Lorenzo Alexander, though?
Seriously. Yeah. It's hard to explain the path of the undrafted free agent catching on anywhere just for a season is remarkable. You know? It's one of those amazing things that you go, that shouldn't happen, right? The likelihood of that happening is, you know, one in a million. And then the likelihood of that player playing, I can't even think of the full number. Was it seven different positions ultimately where you talk D-tackle, guard, extra tight end slash, you know, offensive lineman slash linebacker slash special teams. You add all these things up. The likelihood of him doing what he did, transforming his body to fit to each position. To, you know, hey, you're no longer going to the offensive guard meetings. You actually have to go down the hall to the linebacker meetings. Oh, should I stop at the dietitian on the way and lose 45 pounds and become a chiseled rock of a man? Amazing.
The Giants will not be hiring Jason Garrett.
Ain't happening.
I am sad to admit there was some movement in that direction. Seemed like that was the trend this morning. But Adam Schefter just reporting at 11:15, about 6 minutes ago, that they are finalizing a deal to make Patriots wide receivers coach and special teams coordinator Joe Judge their new head coach. The deal was in the works as of last night, which is another reason why Matt Rhule took the Panthers head coaching job. So a couple things here. Number one, all this Jason Garrett stuff was nonsense.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Because they apparently decided on Joe Judge last night. And second, I wonder which came first. Did Matt Rhule choose Carolina yesterday and tell the Giants, and then they moved on to Judge? Or did they actually choose Joe Judge over Matt Rhule, who everyone said was going to be their choice to begin with? Judge is not known at all. Like, for all the Josh McDaniels and Robert Saleh hype and these coordinators that everyone sees and knows, I just had to look up what Joe Judge looks like. I couldn't have recognized him in a lineup. He was the special teams coordinator with the Patriots from 2015 to 2018. This year had a dual role as both their special teams coordinator and their wide receivers coach.
So this is your John Harbaugh school, right? Who was excited about John Harbaugh other than the fact that his name was Harbaugh? And we knew who Jim was, right? This is the kind of relative unknown that probably wows you in the interview process and is probably got a recommendation from folks on high in New England, which carries some weight. Next thing you know, I mean, I'd never heard his name once as a candidate for anything.
Put your feet in the Giants' shoes, but let's pretend like they're the Redskins for a second. If the Redskins hired Joe Judge, you know, the reaction would be, who is this guy? What on earth are they doing? Why did they do this? But wouldn't a little bit of you say, well, he's coming from New England. So that smells like a good cologne.
So that seems good.
He's around a all-time Hall of Fame head coach for several years, learning from Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
He's learning from that culture. We talk all the time about hiring from, you know, a place where they do things the correct way, do things successfully. If you're a Giants fan, can you hate this? I think it's hard to hate a hire of a Patriots assistant, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Just because even if you have your concerns, and I'm sure Giants fans, because they've never heard of this guy, will, there are a lot of coaches that come from obscurity to be excellent. I mean, you got to put a lot of faith and trust in the ownership, the Maras, and Dave Gettleman. But you've gone in about 15 minutes from Jason Garrett's a possibility to,
oh my God, no,
Adam Schefter saying, actually, as of last night, turns out they're closing in on a deal with Joe Judge.
I'd rather go who than oh my God, no, right? If that's the comparison, that's the debate. Again, there's so little known about Judge. Kind of, I'm sure people inside the league know that he's probably pretty good, but among us schlubs that are just reacting to stuff, I can't imagine the rank and file Giants fan, despite the fact he'll pretend he knows everything and be very bombastic on some sort of Giants forum, the regular rank and file has no idea what Joe Judge can do or can't do. None. Right? But you just go, well, he knows Bill Belichick and hung out in a great organization. Maybe that gives him some cachet.
Some clarity on the timing from Ian Rappaport. Matt Rhule called the Giants before signing his six-year deal with the Panthers and gave them the opportunity to match and lure him to get on the plane. They declined and hired Joe Judge instead. So Rhule was kind of pitting Carolina against New York, maybe to get more money or to get a sweeter situation. And the Giants said, nope, you're a Panther, enjoy that. And they're hiring Joe Judge. So now let's re-rank the hires. We did this in the first hour before Joe Judge. There are now two today because, while it's not official, Rhule to Carolina, sounds like it's happening, Judge to New York, which means there's one vacancy left, and that's the Cleveland Browns. Would you still have Rivera as your number one hire?
I would.
I've got him two behind Rhule. I think he was the best fit for the Redskins. It was my favorite hire the Redskins could have made.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I like the Rhule hire best. Rivera after that. I'll go McCarthy over Judge. I think it's hard to say Judge over McCarthy because I know nothing about
it's,
him.
You know when they do those head coach rankings that are, you know, just fodder for the offseason?
Yeah, they just throw names
at
the back
end. Well, there's like six guys in the back that we have no idea what kind of coach this guy is. You know, so is Zach Taylor any good? Well, I got one year that says he's probably in over his skis a little bit. But before the season started, I'd have no clue. And that's kind of the way you have to approach this one. So, yeah, I'll give him a four by default, right, among the new hires.
I think Josh McDaniels ends up the head coach of the Browns.
What are his other options?
If not him, well, he has no other options,
right?
But he could stay in New England again. If not him, they could go Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator of the San Francisco 49ers. Weirdly enough, they're the only team that's interviewed him. I would have thought Saleh interviewed with the Giants or a few other teams. The Browns are the only team that has interviewed the San Francisco defensive coordinator, who's a hot commodity. I don't think he'll get a job this time around, but he'll be a household name for the next couple of years. He's the kind of guy like Sean McDermott. First year, you get your name out there. The next year, you actually get an interview. And then within the next 2 years, you got a job.
Another year, no Bieniemy, it sounds like, right? If you're doing the musical chairs.
He didn't even get many. I mean, I guess he got a couple interviews, but he was never a front runner for any of these jobs.
So I think he had four last year, ended up not getting any of the gigs, went back to Kansas City, obviously. They did what they did again, just casually 12-4, a circuitous path where they didn't look as good at some points during the year. But there they are, the two seed in the AFC again, bound for the AFC title game.
You wonder, a couple things have to hurt him. Obviously, Andy Reid runs that entire offensive show, calls the plays. It's his room. That didn't necessarily hurt Doug Peterson or Matt Nagy, though. Those two guys got jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So I do wonder if Bieniemy's past transgressions, remember he got in trouble off the field a few times?
Absolutely.
That can't help him. I don't know how much it hurts him. And then some guys interview well, some guys don't. I have no idea. But it is curious to me. He gets interviews. You know, like Davey Martinez got interviewed 9 times before he got the Nats job, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he'd admit like that maybe that's not his strength, that's not what he does best. But it's odd that he can be heavily involved with an offense this good in a league where everyone's looking for smart young offensive minds.
Right.
And he doesn't get a gig.
It's the idea that
would you leave Kansas City if you're him to go call plays somewhere else? Like Matt LaFleur did, leaving the Rams to go to the Titans.
It may end up being the feedback that you have to get, right? You leave the nest a little bit and just do it for a year. Again, LaFleur's offense in Tennessee was pedestrian at best, but he got the chance to call the plays, so now he's qualified to tell Aaron Rodgers what to do. I don't know. That's a tough question, honestly. I mean, when you look at Bieniemy specifically, you'd speculate maybe it's the interviews or, you know, he's a top five candidate every year and it just sort of hasn't worked out and that it may just be bad circumstance, but it's an interesting path he may have to walk. You're right, just to go somewhere for a year to call the plays.
So just one opening left, the Cleveland Browns. No rush now. Everyone else in the league has a head coach. Grant and Danny on the Fan, what is the best of the playoff games this weekend? We'll give you the top NFC, the top AFC game, and our top seed overall as we look at the field on Grant and Danny in moments right here on the Fan. Away from the start of the second round of the NFL playoffs. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. 106.7 The Fan. And then there were four games this weekend, all of the remaining teams in action with bye weeks in the rearview mirror. So we figured we would take a peek at the four games and go through them, maybe rank them, try to figure out what the best game of the weekend is going to be. If you're just hopping in the car this morning, welcome in. Thanks for listening to G&D. You've missed a lot already today. A couple of head coaching hirings. Carolina, Matt Rhule, the Giants, Joe Judge, the special teams coach of the New England Patriots. Let's go through the four games this weekend, though, Danny. We'll start with the Saturday slate. You get to watch one of these two. Vikings, who just stunned the Saints in San Francisco to play the one seed 49ers, or the Titans, who surprised the Patriots in Foxborough, trying to stop the most electrifying talent in all of sports right now, Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. 8:15 nightcap for Tennessee and Baltimore. Where are your eyeballs?
With all due respect to the fun story that is the Tennessee Titans and playing well since Ryan Tannehill, with all due respect to this year's MVP and them Ravens here, hun, oh yeah, you can't get more Rainy Duyeh interest in any game this weekend than you've got for the Minnesota organization going against Kylehan. Give me that. Inject it into my veins.
Is that just Redskins fan Danny?
It's Redskins fan Danny. It's football narrative Danny. It's all the things I like about sports. Danny. Sign me up for this, SOB. This is the one I want. I want narratives expunged on both sides. I have no idea who I'm rooting for. I don't really care who wins, honestly, but I'm excited to see who does, if that makes any sense.
So, selfishly, just me talking here,
this
guy
is Grant
who
Paulson
loves
talking.
The Washington Redskins, Kirk Cousins, who they let walk, Kyle Shanahan, who they fired, playing in a playoff game. Obviously, that's the one I'm watching. If I separate that, and I am very capable at this point of my life, making decisions with my head and not my heart, it's got to be Titans-Ravens. Lamar Jackson has put on a show with every game he's played.
Oh, yes, he has.
Titans defense is awesome. Mike Vrabel's been able to stop the opposing team's best weapon more often than not this year. And you got the storyline that is Ryan Tannehill's emergence this year, coming off of kind of a nothing game this past week. They need to get more out of him. Can the Ravens stop Derrick Henry, who might be the most dominant non-Lamar Jackson player left in the postseason out of the quarterback division? You know, rank skill players in the postseason. Henry might be the biggest impact guy of the lot right now, certainly at the running back spot. So I'll go Titans-Ravens. How about Sunday? You got the Texans and the Chiefs kicking off at 3:05 at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. It's going to be cold, and it'll smell like barbecue. Tailgating set to begin at about 9 a.m., 6 hours before kickoff. Texans came back from down 16-0. Deshaun Watson has played two playoff games. Hadn't played particularly well in either, but he made a couple hero plays, and he made a couple outstanding game-changing scramble decisions late against the Bills to put his team over the top.
He's so awesome.
Pat Mahomes, if Lamar Jackson isn't your favorite player to watch in football, if Deshaun Watson, who's yours, I know, isn't the guy you tune in for, then maybe you're in my camp and you say that Pat Mahomes is your favorite player in this sport, your must-see TV player. He's my one seed. Mahomes, Watson, going to be fun, but you also have a night game that promises to be the closest of the weekend. The best point spread right now in terms of how close these two teams are via Vegas. Seattle, Green Bay separated by about 4 points. Russell Wilson's going to have to carry the Seahawks without Chris Carson. They're saying that they're going to give the football more to the ageless wonder out of retirement. in their backfield, Marshawn Lynch and the Green Bay Packers got a bye, still aren't getting anybody to buy in.
Uh-huh.
There aren't really believers in this team being as good as their 13-3 record. Which game's better?
Despite the fact that I think there might be 60 points scored plus in that Houston-Kansas City game, two dynamic quarterbacks just doing work, give me that Seattle-Green Bay game. I'm going double-time NFC action for the reasons you mentioned. Seattle, it's the Russell Wilson show. Pull magic out of your tuchus with an 800-year-old running back that's out of shape and receivers that don't really like getting open and Jacob Hollister at tight end. A defense that's makeshift and getting by on scheme and Band-Aids and they're just okay versus Green Bay that's got some narratives to expunge in their own right, right? Because you're right about this. Despite being 13-3, nobody believes in them. I'm intrigued by that matchup. Two of the most exciting dynamic players, and then you start adding in some of the receivers. Think of DeAndre Hopkins, you think of Tyreek Hill, you think of the various weapons, Travis Kelce and company. With all due respect to those guys, I'm in for the Narrative Bowl, which is the second game on Sunday afternoon. So give me both NFC games if I'm doing must-watch.
Ooh, how about that? I'll go with the AFC matchup. We're actually going separate in both of these.
Two AFCs for Paulson.
Yeah, I think Seahawks-Packers might be closer, might be better, but I want to watch Watson and Mahomes. I think that early game on Sunday, and plus I'm in on the Chiefs, man. I really love watching this group. Their offense is fun.
Credit to you. You've been on this for longer than everybody else.
I mean, they were great last year. It's not like I discovered a new country.
Well, when no one was talking about them, you were. So I'm trying to give you some credit. Just accept the credit.
I appreciate that.
I'm giving you credit.
If I called the Titans in week three, it would probably be more deserving of your praise. But I appreciate that the reigning MVP, Pat Mahomes, and the Chiefs, the fact that I said that they're going to be good by the end of the year, that you're harping some praise on me for that. So then rank your four. 1 through 4 matchups that you want to watch the most to the least of this weekend.
All right, here we go. Number one, I already touched on it, Minnesota versus San Francisco. I love this game. Number two is probably Seattle-Green Bay. Number three, Houston-Kansas City. So coming in at number four, unfortunately, even though I'm excited about this game too, is Ravens-Titans. I just think the Ravens are going to boat race the Titans. I think their time is up.
Do you really?
Good for you, Tennessee. Thanks for being here. We really appreciate it. Great story. Now it's time for the adults.
I'll say one, Ravens-Titans, two, Chiefs-Texans, three, Vikings-Niners, four, Seahawks-Packers in that order. Seahawks make games really boring in their style of play. Brian Schottenheimer calling plays. They're fun to watch because it's the NFL and their games are all close. They have 11 wins in one possession games at this point this year, tying the 2015 Broncos for the most ever. But you saw the Eagles game. I mean, it was great. I loved it. But it was just ugly.
It. Yeah, it was ugly.
That's what their games look
this
like.
This is a, hey, Russell, hey, bud, can you do some magic tricks for us? Hey, thanks.
But again, that's the head. Now, the heart, you take football national opinion out of the equation.
Now, which Paulson is this? This is heart Paulson?
This is your boy Jeeps.
Okay.
Inject Vikings 49ers into my veins.
Give it to me.
And then give me a little Matty LaFleur. I wish all those teams played at once. It really is a shame the Rams aren't still in. So it could be the Cousins versus Shanahan, LaFleur versus McVay NFC Final Four.
Can you imagine like
steamed up.
The music plays and it's welcome to the bowl games of people that Grant Paulson has covered. Like, and that's the headline and that's how we go.
Oh man, that would have been an all-timer. We were close.
Yeah, we
sniffed. We were close. And now Sean McVay's blowing things up with the Rams.
Yeah, no more Wade Phillips.
Wade Phillips is out. His running backs coach is out. He's making some changes.
They need, I mean, here's the thing, and they're also in a bad spot, too. You look at them and Houston, where now the Rams went all in, understandably so, because you got a young quarterback with a ton of money coming his way pretty soon, but they had a window. Houston forfeited all of their picks because they let Bill O'Brien try to win now. So you look at them going forward, it's not all of a sudden not ideal in either one of those spots.
If McVay is refurbishing his staff, by the way, mm-hmm. and wants to kind of solidify himself with some people that think like he does, I'll tell you right now, Kevin O'Connell would make sense for him.
Oh.
Now, I know Kevin O'Connell probably wants to work with Josh McDaniels, but there's only one job left. What if Bieniemy or Salah or somebody else gets that Browns job?
So if McDaniels gets it or goes,
right.
then KOC's
If O'Connell's
wrong.
Out of a gig, I bet you McVay would call that guy. If you really think I need to have a better staff next year or else we're in a little trouble. Why wouldn't you? Grant and Danny on the Fan. It is time for our double play next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. At noon, we're going blitzing around the Beltway. And you'll want to hear our 12-18 topic today. We're going to go through all of the wacky rules in the XFL, and we'll tell you if we like them or we dislike them, and we'll pick one to implement in the NFL immediately. All coming up on The Fan. We'll go blitzing at noon, get into the XFL rules that we like and dislike at 12:18. The XFL, by the way, kicks off in 1 month. In fact, a month from tomorrow, the first game, it'll be 1 week after the Super Bowl in XFL 2.0 history. Of course, we've got a team right here in the nation's capital. It'll be playing at Audi Field about half a mile from where we're sitting right now. Is it even a half mile? I mean, it's pretty damn close. Drive a golf ball or two over that way.
This is where I get a little hazy. How many yards?
It's a quarter. Maybe it's like a mile is 5,280 feet.
But it feels like it's more than like 2,100 feet.
Then
or
you
2,600.
But it's as the bird flies. You know what I mean?
Well, your crow is going to fly that way.
Does the crow fly different than the eagle?
Well, there's a swallow, and then African swallows have different.
It all makes sense.
I mean, once you start doing the math.
Craig Lachlan's on the show today at 12:45.
Hold it here.
Caps won their most exciting game of the year in one of their most unlikely wins in franchise history. We'll ask Locker about it coming up in 1 hour. Also, they've got a game tonight against a pretty bad team that they should beat, so we can discuss that. And with so much Nats news, we covered it in the first hour of the show, we will bring on Todd Dybas of NBC Sports Washington. Are they done? Is this their roster? Will they add Josh Donaldson? He's got some new wrinkles and developments on Donaldson. It'll tell you about it 1:30 that he's been reporting today. So that is coming up on G&D, but let's get to our double play.
Quickly, for the record, I have started the Grant Paulson Netflix show review, Don't Bleep with Cats. I'm only an episode and change into it. I doubled down on his recommendation. It's enthralling. Watch this thing. You're going to have your stomach turn a little bit initially.
Yes.
It's hard to see some of this stuff, but I will tell you, once they get into the mystery, the threads being pulled, I cannot wait to watch it.
Get past the first 10 to 12 minutes, which is tough. But you don't actually see. I mean, you know what's happening, but you don't actually see what's happening. But you get through that, and you get to the part where you get to play detective.
It's outstanding.
It's all it is it's the kind of programming that is sweeping the entire country.
Yeah, it's Netflix's wheelhouse at this point. So speaking of another documentary, and this is a Danny Ruye Netflix show review situation, Confessions. Or The Confessions Killer. The Confessions Killer is the name of the program. It's about Henry Lee Lucas, a guy that I had no file on at all, who finally passed away in prison in 2001. So initially, the police capture this guy for what they believe was a murder along the highway in Texas. What quickly happens is this, frankly, fairly simple-minded gentleman who just wants to please his... sort of the policeman that's holding him, the Texas marshals, the Texas lawmen, the Texas Rangers that are holding him, who's this guy's kind of like searching for a father figure, it seems, right? He eventually starts just fessing up and confessing to a staggering and unspeakable number of crimes. The number grows, depending on who you ask, from, you know, a handful, a couple dozen, to 213 previously unsolved murders as a result of his confessions. Think about this. I'm going to say this one more time. 213 nationwide previously unsolved murders. Some people estimate the number is even higher than that. What happens is people that have been working these cold cases around the country for so long with no leads, nothing positive, nobody could figure anything out, are basically calling. They want 20 minutes with the guy. The Texas Rangers, this task force, allow people to come visit him. They're like, any chance you were in Minneapolis, outside Minneapolis, in 1981? He's like, yeah. Any chance you committed these crimes? Totally. Boom. It's solved. Everyone goes home happy with a cleared stat. They'll go, hey, I know you said you were in Minneapolis on August 21st. On August 22nd, were you outside of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and you killed some drifter? Yeah, I did that. Any chance on the 24th you were in Portland, Oregon, and did this one? Yeah.
They don't have to go back and prove it. They just kind of check it off.
He confesses. He confesses and confesses and confesses. It's unbelievable.
Why does he do it?
Again, it's a reason that you would dismiss because you're a reasonable person. He's basically trying to please the Texas Ranger that's holding him in this facility. He's living better than he has as a drifter.
But he is not of apt mind.
he's not, I don't know how to describe it. You would say he's a simple-minded guy.
Right.
Right? But he's not crazy.
A guy who's not, like, worldly and experienced and maybe not the sharpest tool in the shed, or a guy who's lacking a little bit and not completely
right. He's
with
not
it.
A bright guy, okay. You would say. But so there's a journalist, a guy named Hugh Ainsworth, who, and among other people, start to poke some easily available holes in this guy's story. And again, I don't want to spoil everything for you, but it basically turns into a tug of war and a conflict between the law enforcement, who are like, we want these things cleared. This guy seems to have done it. Versus people are going, hey, there's some pretty easy things to you know, if you just look, if you're just willing to look at all, that stand in, you know, complete opposite to some of these things you guys are claiming assault. It's a story I'd never heard before. That's kind of one of the things I love about documentaries like this. Highly, highly recommend it. In terms of the quality, it's not as good as, say, you know, Don't Bleep with Cats or some of the other ones like, what's the one I'm thinking of? The Duplass Brothers, Evil Genius. It's not as riveting as some of those, but your jaw drops just so many times over at kind of how crazy this thing gets and how much it grows over the course of several years, starting in around 1983. And again, he was, we believe, I say we, that he did actually kill some people in his life. Probably not 213 separate incidents, though. And the fact that he keeps confessing to it and this sort of sham was allowed to go on for so long, fascinating documentary. I give it overall, in terms of production and everything else, entertainment value high. Some of the other things to it, you wish you'd moved a little quicker. I say 7.5 carbohydrates out of 10. Very much worth watching.
I'm in on that. It is time for my double play. So I got two. I'll make them really quick. The first is that when I go out to eat now, which is not as often as I'd like it to be with a baby, we're home way more often. I like to go out to restaurants, but now we kind of eat at the house more often.
Mm-hmm.
We go super early. We're on the Johnny Cakes Allville time frame.
Oh,
we
yeah.
go out to restaurants at like 5, 5:15 because the baby goes to bed at like 6.
That is correct.
Now, on nights where you go out, maybe you get home 6:15, 6:30, whatever. But we're out at the restaurant at like 5:15. So we were laughing when we were getting there. My wife's like, it's going to be us and old people.
This is me.
And we walked in, and I'm telling you, the average age at Bonefish last night was probably 86 years old.
No one misses the early bird.
Other than us. It was just... There were no hairs in that restaurant that were not completely white. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I love going out to eat at like 5 o'clock. Service is great. Restaurants are not crowded. There's no wait for tables. You don't have to worry about your meal coming out after 25 minutes because it's busy. It's not loud. Like, I know I sound like I'm 100 years old, and I am probably 100 years old, but it is awesome. If you've never tried it, you got to try to eat at like 5 or 6. Here's the problem, though. The problem with going to the restaurant and being seated at 5, 5:15 is that by about 8:30, you are really hungry again. Like, what do you do on those nights at 9 o'clock? You just have to drink a bunch of water and try not to eat real late. So that's the challenge I get on the back end, but I'm just telling you the 5 o'clock dinner thing, Johnny Cakes Allville has it right. Second, and this is just real short, Baker Mayfield got clubbed by the media nationally and to some extent in Cleveland. Because he, quote, went out and had a drink on New Year's Eve.
So weird to me.
Stop with that. Stop. I don't know if people are trying to make him Johnny Manziel or what the point is. I think this was because he's Baker Mayfield and there's questions because he had the thing where he ran away from the cops. And is he mature? Is he not mature? The idea that a quarterback having a drink on New Year's Eve when the season is over is any kind of a story. Or I don't care if he went out and he was drunk at a public bar.
So he had 31 drinks.
Now, if he's acting a fool as a drunk dude at a public bar, you could question some judgment. You know, you're the CEO of a big company. You probably shouldn't be doing that as the quarterback of an NFL team. But because he's out having a drink, that's a story. I hate stuff like that. It gives media a bad name. Like, focus on what matters, please. And things that don't, please ignore them.
And when you treat all the things as the same, you lose credibility. I'm with you, right? Like, it's way bigger deal to me than he's, like, commenting on personnel decisions and, you know, basically saying that this one guy who's done nothing but his job should get the bleep out of here. We're talking about, like, Duke Johnson. Some of the other transgressions that rubbed me the wrong way about Baker Mayfield, fair game in my opinion.
Yeah, how about he just had a down year?
Yeah,
he didn't play well.
Treat that like it deserves to be treated, but when you make the same level of like, this is a huge deal, as some of the other things, you lose credibility.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. The Beltway Blitz is next. We'll talk XFL rules at 12:18 and Craig Laughlin on the Capitals today at 12:45.
I am an EMP 180 graduate. So is Grant. So are his brother. So many are. hundreds of our listeners as well. These guys do such an awesome job, right? You will look better. You will feel better than you have in years. If you follow what they say, a nutrition, science-based approach, they figure out where your pitfalls are, where your challenges are. For me, it's every afternoon around 3:30, 4 o'clock. I get so hungry, I got to figure out a way to navigate it. EMP 180 has helped me do that. You do what they say, you will lose weight. You will lose fat, and you'll look better than you have in years.
EMP 180, you can call them at 855-888-0180. That's 855-888-0180, or you can go to emp180.com. You do what my brothers did when they lost a combined 100 pounds, or do what Danny and I have done, where we are down a bunch of weight. I mean, at our fattest, Danny, we were pretty gross.
Oh, yeah.
We are less gross now. EMP 180 is the reason why. Do what we did and get on board. No time, like right now, to kick off the new year.
855-888-0180.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.